Transmitting from the dimensional nexus at the core of the multiverse, it's the Everyworld News, bringing you reports of the latest events from every possible reality.
Greetings, I'm Jim Ryan. Today we'll be looking into the latest World Domination Declaration by Lord Malevolent in the Hero Continuum, we'll be investigating the causes of a mysterious giant whirlpool that's appeared on Maritime Earth, and we'll be taking a look back at the career of Spider-Boy, Scorched Earth's recently deceased premier mutant entertainer. Corporate analyst Anna Johnson will bring us the latest financial news from Cyber Dystopia, Stygian Earth's own patchwork Joe Mundy will talk about what's happening in the world of lycanthropic basketball, and travel correspondent Barrington Taylor will tell us about his stay in the village of Mammoth Pass in the Dragon Dimension. We'll have all that, plus a guest editorial from Lord Vladimir Popov III, and more feedback from the future. Back in a bit.
This is Luscious Leftovers.
Luscious Lips. I'm thinking about the graphic you have for Luscious Leftovers.
A podcast about food.
You know, it's like essentially eight eggs and a stick of butter.
Eating.
How she eats is an indication of how she will be in bed later.
Cooking.
I'm having my steak in a very particular gourmet way. No, you're not! You're having it raw!
And the other pleasures of life.
There's a reality show for you, you know. Who wants to be a reproductive scientist? A sex scientist.
Check it out at partsandends.net/luscious leftovers.
Took me, you know, an hour or two.
Eat it or to cook it?
Oh, to eat both, jeez.
Or find it on iTunes.
If I win, I get sex, and if you win, you get sex.
Our top story. On Earth 86 in the Hero Continuum, Lord Malevolent, the ruler of the island nation of Transaldonia, has declared that he intends to take over the world. The announcement was made at a press conference held at Castle Malevolent earlier today.
Tremble, pitiful mortals! I, Lord Malevolent, declare that before the year is out, every single man, woman, and child on Earth will bow down before me. You will all acknowledge me as your lord and master or suffer the consequences. The world shall be mine.
Lord Malevolent, will we be enslaved against our will?
No. Sorry. No questions at this time, please. All will be revealed soon enough. My henchmen will be coming around distributing pamphlets regarding my plan for the New World Order. In the meantime, we will be serving coffee and Eccles cake in the foyer.
Naturally, this has caused an uproar among the world's major governments. The United Nations Security Council held an emergency meeting shortly after Lord Malevolent's announcement, after which UN Secretary General Ian Wilkinson issued the following statement.
We have reviewed Transaldonia's proposal for centralized world government, and while we do not agree with it, no further action can be taken at this time due to the fact that no crime has been committed. Likewise, despite the inflammatory nature of Lord Malevolent's statements earlier today, Transaldonia has made no specific threats of conflict as of yet, so while we must proceed with caution, there is little that can be done at this time.
Several members of the superhero community have been greatly disturbed by this turn of events. On the line with us now, we have the masked vigilante known as the Castigator, who operates primarily in Anvil City. Are you there?
Oh, I'm here all right. There ain't nothing that could keep me away at a time like this.
What's your take on what's been going on?
Those soft-headed melon heads in the UN have no idea what they're up against. We need to go on alert right now and get somebody out there to deal with this.
It looks like the major world governments disagree with you.
Those pencil-pushing idiots are all afraid of getting blood on their hands. They let the costume types like us do all the dirty work. It's gonna come down to that, too, you mark my words. If I weren't so busy with these gang wars here in Anvil City, I'd go down there myself and give that overinflated dictator a lead shower he'd never forget.
So, what do you see as the solution here?
Those fence-sitters over at the Hall of Integrity are gonna have to get off their spandex-covered butts and do something.
Thank you for your time.
Sure thing, but if you'll excuse me now, I've got some mob bosses to go and pulverize.
With tensions mounting and the world's governments effectively paralyzed in the face of whatever's to come, eyes are now turning to the Integrity Force. With us now is Courtesy Girl, one of their newest members.
Hello! everyone. It sure is a pleasure to be here.
I know you probably don't have a lot of time to talk to us, what with everything that's going on, but I was wondering if you could give us some idea of how the Integrity Force is reacting to all this.
Gosh, it's really exciting, isn't it?
I guess you could say that.
When Lord Malevolent made that speech, we were all pretty fired up, I can tell you.
I can imagine.
Dr. Nightshade got all mopey and wouldn't come out of her room, and Captain Radiant was hopping mad. He was getting ready to beam himself all the way over to Transylvania. The Dusky Avenger and Carbon Copy had to spend the next half hour getting him calmed down. He turned about 7 different shades of red before they were done.
So, have you decided anything?
Well, kind of. Lord Malevolent has sent us an invitation to go and see him at his lair. He's really sneaky and really evil, so he must be getting ready to do something really bad. Only we don't know what it is, so we're gonna have to just go down there and pay him a visit.
Are you going to fight him?
Oh gosh, no. That would be wrong. All he's done is say he's going to take over the world, and we certainly can arrest him for that. When we go down there, we're gonna sit down with him, have a nice cup of tea, and try to work things out. Just because he's evil doesn't mean we can't keep things polite.
I believe you've sent us the audio for that invitation you received.
Yes, that's right.
Let's listen to that for a moment.
Integrity Force, I wanted to send you a little message to let you know that there is absolutely nothing you can do to stop me. My plans are already in motion, and it is too late for you to try to interfere. Still, I am not without mercy. And you have been worthy adversaries in the past, so I extend to you an invitation. Come to Castle Malevolent, and we will discuss the new roles you will play under my leadership.
You know, I don't want to jump the gun here or anything, but it sounds like a trap.
Gee, I guess it could be, but we have to give him the benefit of the doubt, because that's what heroes do. Besides, if he tries anything, we'll beat the tar out of him.
Great. It's good to know you have a plan, then. Thanks for talking to us.
You're welcome.
For another perspective on this issue, we now turn to one of the founders of the League of Valor, veteran and longtime superhero Doc Elastic.
Good to be here, son.
What's your take on the situation?
I don't think much is really going to happen. I've tangled with Lord Malevolent quite a few times over the years. It looks like he's still using the same old tactics.
So he's done this kind of thing before?
Yes, sir. Over and over again. I don't think he can let a day go by without trying to convince somebody that he's going to take over the world. He's just trying to get a rise out of us so he can gloat. He's a big gloater. I fought his father, the previous Lord Malevolent, back in World War II, and he did exactly the same thing.
So do you think his recent invitation to the Integrity Force is a trap?
Of course it's a trap. I've tried to warn them, but these youngsters just never listen. They get all psyched up and fly off without a battle plan. You mark my words, he'll have them dangling over a pit of piranhas before the whole thing's over.
Sounds pretty serious.
Well, I'm sure he'll leave an opening for them to escape. His death traps aren't that hard to get out of, and his henchmen are usually about as smart as a pile of rocks. He's nothing if not consistent.
Thanks for speaking with us. We'll have more on this situation as it develops. Or fails to develop, as the case may be. Meanwhile, on Maritime Earth, a giant whirlpool has opened up in the Atlantic Ocean several miles northeast of the Bermuda Triangle. Thus far, the cause of the disturbance is unknown. Captain Jean Pegleg LeBlanc of the French Allied privateer vessel the Dawn Crusher was in the vicinity when the whirlpool first manifested.
The Dawn Crusher was escorting a vessel called the Maiden's Eye, carrying a shipment of tobacco from the colonies. We always stayed just a few chains ahead of them. All looked well until dawn broke 3 days out from Bermuda. Just as the sun was coming over the horizon, we heard a terrible crashing noise behind us. We looked back and saw that a great vortex had opened up in the ocean and the Maiden's Eye had been pulled in. There was nothing we could do for them. As it was, we on the Dawn Crusher barely escaped with our lives.
Port authorities are warning all ships to steer clear of that area, which has caused some serious consternation among traders. Earlier today, the Vatican released a statement indicating that the maelstrom is the result of one of the more powerful curses known only to a few individuals. Shortly afterward, Madame Lilith, one of the Caribbean's most powerful sea hags and founder of the Society for the Advancement of Hideous Magical Creatures, came forward and spoke to Maritime Earth correspondent Smiling Pete.
Ahoy there, everyone. Smiling Pete here with Everyworld News. Madam Lilith, might I say you're looking more hideous than ever today?
Why, thank you, Pete. You've always been such a charmer.
Well, you make it easy, darling. Now, I'm sure you've heard about this curse theory the church is going on. What do you have to say to that?
The Mortal Church is attempting to shift blame for their own shortcomings onto those whom they find to be convenient targets. Quick to panic, they are, whenever one of your human vessels is pulled down to the watery grave. But, amusing though this development is, I'm afraid that neither I nor any member of my organization is responsible.
Really now?
Aye, the shaft in the ocean floor reaches all the way down to the abyss, of that I can be certain. True, there were curses, as could summon Charybdis himself, if all you desired to do was swallow ships whole, but to open a scar in the earth that deep is just asking for trouble.
So, 'tis not a curse?
Oh, 'tis a curse, all right, but not one of mine.
Well, thank you for giving your perspective, Lilith, you most ugly and decrepit of crones, you.
Oh, Pete, you say the sweetest things.
Same place and time as always?
Of course. And don't forget the rum and the implements of fornication this time, or I'll turn you into a coelacanth.
I would expect nothing less, my dear. For the Everworld News, this is Smiling Pete reporting.
Thanks for that disturbingly thorough interview, Pete. To try to get a perspective on the possible causes for this unusual phenomenon, we're now joined by Bishop Lorenzo Delgado of the Catholic Inquisition.
Buenos dias, senor.
And Mambo Naomi Moreau, favored chual of Baron Samedi.
Good day to you.
So let me start with the obvious question. Bishop Delgado, why is this happening?
As stated earlier, the Vatican maintains the position that a powerful agent of the devil has attempted to place a curse of some kind on trade vessels. But I believe that a curse is not the direct cause. I believe that this is the Lord's punishment for the greed of mankind and the pagan ways of so many of the ungodly inhabitants of the Caribbean islands.
You are a fool, Bishop. Your Inquisition goes out slaying thousands of innocents and you have the temerity to call us godless? If anyone is being punished, it's your church and the government it depends on for being so fat-headed.
So, Mama Naomi, you think this is a punishment as well?
Of course not. Don't be silly, child. Who punishes someone by putting a great hole in the ocean far away from everywhere? If you want to punish someone, you put the hole right under their house. That's what you do.
What then?
I think this is something dark and ancient that has chosen to resurface after centuries untold. Something from the old world has clearly arisen.
Do not be so melodramatic, Signora. If you heathens hadn't worshipped so many of those elder evils, this never would have happened.
I'm just going to throw this question out there. What steps should be taken to find a solution to this issue?
Simple prayer is always the best remedy. That and torture, of course. I've sent agents out to find those responsible and excruciate them. Pain is the gateway to truth, and confession is so very good for the soul. This is why our customers never complain.
They never complain because they have no tongues left to complain with.
Well, that too, I must admit.
The only way to find a solution is to commune with the people of the sea, those who lie deep below the surface.
Abominations, all.
No more so than you, Bishop.
Thanks to both of you for coming on the program.
The Lord be with you, my son.
Common sense be with you, more like.
It appears that communing with the people of the sea, as Mama Naomi put it, is precisely what certain government leaders have in mind. King Charles I of England has entered talks with the Tritons of the underwater city-state of Atlantis. To discuss that, we now have on the line Senator Kathodosh of the Atlantean High Council. Are you there, Senator? I'm sorry, Senator. I'm having trouble understanding you.
Can you hear me now, human?
Ah, yes, that's much better.
You air breathers have such primitive sound machinery.
Yes, sorry about that, Senator. But could I just ask how things are going at the conference?
Of course you could. Why are you unaware of this?
No, I meant, how are things going at the conference?
Oh, why didn't you say so? It's going badly. They tried to serve us cooked fish. Cooked!
Barbarians.
But, what about the issue with the giant whirlpool in the Atlantic?
That? Oh, that was just an accident. Our people are on it.
An accident?
It would take far too long for me to explain the intricacies of our Atlantean machinery to you. Suffice it to say, there was a slight miscalculation and we did not realize that the drill would be loud enough to wake him up.
Wait a minute, wake who
up? He's not scheduled to awaken for another 300 years. How are we to know? Nothing to worry about, though. We should have him tranquil again soon. Everything is under control. Now, if you will excuse me, I'm running short on time and must return to the conference. Good day.
Wait, Senator. Senator? Are you there? Senator? Well, I guess that's all we have on this story for now. We'll doubtless have more as events continue to escalate. One of the foremost entertainers on Scorched Earth, Abel Spider Boy Fisher, passed away this morning due to complications from his mutation. Fisher is best remembered for the organization and running of the Mutant Carnival, which toured the main transport circuits in North America from the year 2049 up until the present year of 2064. He came into the public eye as a multidimensional contortionist, and from there built a career that would span multiple decades. We spoke with his manager and longtime friend, Benny Doyle.
I met Spider-Boy back in 37, not too long after the Atlantic rose. I was doing band promotions at the time and was traveling on a barge with the old Country Cockroaches and a couple of their opening acts. We were all just a bunch of ordinary folk trying our best to make it up to the Appalachians, where we heard the water had stopped. We found ourselves run aground on an island that turned out to be what was left of a mutant colony that'd been up in the mountains near where Atlanta used to be. We took all those poor, disfigured bastards on board because of how eloquent Spider-Boy was on their behalf. That kid could talk a mile a minute. Heck of a contortionist, too, on account of his mutation. He could actually twist himself into more than three dimensions. Darndest thing I ever seen. By the time we got into what used to be Tennessee and the water started receding, I had him and some of his mutant buddies signed up to join our band on a tour of half a dozen settlements.
Spider-Boy would go on several such tours, performing carnival acts to open for a number of rock, bluegrass, and post-industrial progressive bands. As he went, he attracted quite a few followers who came to join his act, out-of-work entertainers and quite a few fellow mutants. It wasn't long before the act that was then known as Spider-Boy and the Dysfunctional Circus became the headliner, with musical acts opening for them. Osgood Helgram, elder of Muskrat Village, located in the former state of Pennsylvania, remembered seeing one of their early performances.
It was like magic. It was so horrible, yet so wonderful at the same time. So original, so strange, that no description could really do it justice. For that one terrifying hour, I forgot all about what had happened to the world. The antimatter missiles, the vortex bombs, all of it. And just watched the impossible unfold before me in stark terror and confusion. I don't think I'll ever forget it, no matter how hard I try. It was like the end of days, yet that already happened.
But some places wouldn't give Fisher such a warm reception. Tragedy struck when the Dysfunctional Circus visited the walled city of New Peoria in 2048. High Marshal Jane Pruitt recounts the story.
I knew that little bastard was going to be trouble the moment he brought his herd of mutant friends and sympathizers into my city. I was Lieutenant Marshal at the time and tried to warn our head honcho, High Marshal Bradford, that those scum weren't to be trusted, but he just wouldn't listen. The fight started to break out the moment they started to perform their so-called act. It was one of the most depraved displays of the near-human condition I'd ever seen, like an asylum with the lunatics in charge. The audience went crazy. People were yelling incoherently at the tops of their lungs, beating the crap out of each other, and even throwing themselves against the walls of the theater. The frenzy just got bigger and bigger until half of them started throwing rocks at us while the other half rushed the stage. We had to call for backup, and by the time the shock troops arrived, they'd torn the theater apart. The city's only theater.
The paramilitary leadership of New Peoria struggled to regain control of the city, and only did so at the cost of their leader's life, as well as the lives of countless citizens. The majority of the members of the Dysfunctional Circus were slain, and those remaining, led by Fisher and Doyle, were forced to flee the city. They traveled for some time and eventually found refuge in Ashtown. Located near the burning wheat fields of Montana, Ashtown is one of the largest mutant colonies on scorched earth. Headpastor Don Shockley and his wife Rita, who's a former member of Fisher's troupe, reflected on Spider-Boy's regrouping and subsequent launch to stardom.
After the incident in New Peoria, Spider-Boy built up quite a following. We were glad to welcome him.
When we were out on the road, he took care of all of us like family. There are some pretty terrifying things out there, especially in the ruins of those places where the bombs went off. But sometimes we had to get close to them to scavenge for supplies. Spider-Boy showed us when to hide and when to fight.
I first heard tell of him when we'd get the occasional chatter over ham radio talking about him. The folks who would come to visit, missionaries, traveling musicians, postal mercenaries, and the like, would bring us stories about the great mutant leader Spider-Boy and how he took down the oppressive High Marshal of New Peoria.
Of course, all the tales grew in the telling. Mostly, we were just trying to survive.
Well, when he got here, we had nearly 100 mutants wanting to join up with him and help him start again. You remember that?
Oh, goodness, yes. It was miraculous. When his manager, Benny, made the announcement that night after our prayer meeting that they were putting a new show together, the whole congregation stood up and cheered.
Those that could stand up. Some of us sort of lifted our heads or hovered in the air, like a few of us do.
Shh. Oh, Don, you old aberrant, you.
Fisher's new following allowed him to form the Mutant Carnival, a huge band of entertainers of all calibers. We were going to provide archive footage from one of their performances, but unfortunately the recording was unable to pass required standards as determined by the Multiversal Audio Safety Committee. The members of the carnival have toured most major settlements in North America for 15 years, and are preparing to continue on in Spider-Boy's memory, taking their show on a tour of the communities of two more of the remaining five continents. Fisher was 46 years old. He is survived by his daughter Mavis, his friends, and his pet Smilodon, Phoebe.
You may not be aware, but every year, thousands upon thousands of Martian children go without podcasts.
Mars needs podcasts.
So, this holiday season, no matter when in the year you happen to hear this promo, why don't you think about the Martians?
Mars needs podcasts.
Think about them by going to theweirdshow.com and subscribing.
Mars needs podcasts.
For your subscription, you'll receive a weekly, roughly one-hour podcast. All about Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, UFOs, odd science, incredible science, Martians.
Mars needs podcasts.
And for every subscription you make between now and some arbitrarily far future date, I'll make sure that a Martian also gets a subscription for free.
Mars needs podcasts.
That's right. As soon as we've been able to establish communication with the Martians, and as soon as they are able to actually subscribe to my show, I'll make sure to let them subscribe for free.
The Weird Show.
And now for financial news, we have corporate analyst and cyber guru Anna Johnson with the story on a recent major acquisition on the world of cyber dystopia. Welcome to the program, Anna.
Thanks, Jim. The cyber ether is buzzing today with the news that media giant Omnihedral Entertainment has been bought out by the global electronic and textile company Pleasure Corp. That means that now fully three-quarters of the world's media is owned and operated by...
Gentlemen, do you have trouble keeping your ladies satisfied, both intellectually and carnally? Now, you can have the best of both worlds with the newest Sonnet Generator headwear from Pleasure Corp. Plug in and have the most romantic and sensual world of Petrarch, Shakespeare, Spencer at your beck and call. Lure her into your bedchamber with words that could melt a glacier for only 29 credits. Download now.
Anna, can you hear me?
Yes, Jim, I'm here.
What was that?
I'm sorry? What was what?
Someone broke in with an ad for sonnets or something.
Oh, that. That's nothing to worry about. But the really big news is...
It is something to worry about. You know we don't have those kinds of ads on this podcast.
I am sorry about that. As a freelancer for Omnihedral, I had their headwear implanted, and there's probably just a little bleed over between this transmission and my spam filters. I've cleared out my cache now, though, so we shouldn't have to worry about that again.
Okay, good. Now, what else has been going on in the world of finance over there?
Well, like I was saying, the big news is that Falcon Biologic, one of the North American Union's largest medical research and insurance companies, has stopped production of Somadroxil in the wake of a number of new government sanctions. The drug, which is commonly used by vehicle owners with neural steering interfaces, puts the rest of the brain into a sleep state while keeping only those parts needed to use the interface awake. This effectively allows drivers to continue traveling while asleep. Falcon Biologic stock is falling dramatically as a result of the discontinuation of that drug, but they're making every effort to put a positive spin on the situation. Meanwhile, rival insurer Moxco has taken advantage by partnering with Japan's Hoken Corporation to offer new interface insurance premium levels to former users of the drug.
Sounds like they're going to make a tidy profit there.
It does indeed, Jim.
Didn't I hear that Moxco has ties to the North American Union's narcotics lobby and that they were pushing them for sanctions like these?
Possibly, though that rumor hasn't been substantiated. In the meantime, Moxco will be offering the first month free on these premiums and bonus hours of coverage for referring a friend. In times like these, getting the peace of mind that decent interface insurance can bring is a rare thing. There can be any number of accidents that can cause permanent brain damage, or worse, can cause a user's mind to be cut off from their body and cast adrift in cyberspace. With Moxco's new premium levels, even those with lower incomes can make sure their families are well looked after.
Why do you sound like a commercial all of a sudden?
No reason.
Wait, let me guess. Moxco is a subsidiary of Pleasure Corp, isn't it?
Yes. Sorry, I couldn't help it. It's wired into me.
Sure it is. Anyway, that's enough product placement for one podcast. Thanks for your report, Anna. And now, sports. On Stygian Earth, the final games of the playoffs for the LNBA, that's the Lycanthropic National Basketball Association, have begun. Correspondent Patchwork Joe Mundy is at the Chicago Arena. What's it looking like out there, Joe?
Jim, it is looking brutal. The Miami Terriers were butchered in a pitch game with the Cleveland Mastiffs last night. Things got pretty heated on the court, but thankfully no fatalities this time.
So I take it basketball on Stygian Earth gets kind of heated.
You have no idea. When you have at least 10 werewolves going at each other for over an hour, there's bound to be bloodshed. The first half of the game is played in human form, but after halftime, the claws come out and pretty much anything goes.
Sounds like it can get pretty rough.
Oh, it can! I remember a game in LA back in the 70s, not long after I was reanimated, where a team of 5 were-rats got slaughtered wholesale, and that is not a metaphor. The mortal authorities caught wind of it, and the whole league almost got shut down then and there. Ever since, no lycanthrope under 5 feet in height in their natural form has been allowed admittance to the league.
That sounds a bit harsh.
Tough times call for tough measures, Jim. Thankfully, this time around, there was nothing but a few cuts and bruises, except for the incident where Brom Jones of the Terriers lost a finger. His parents tell us it's regenerating back nicely.
Well, that's good news. What's up next?
Tonight, the Chicago White Shepherds were supposed to be playing the Washington Razorbacks. That's a team of mostly werebores, but as you may have heard, they've all been out due to swine flu.
Yeah, we've had that on Earth Prime, too.
Here, it's almost a pandemic. I'm just thankful I don't have to worry about diseases anymore. But members of the Razorbacks have been catching a lot of heat because a couple of them have been accused of spreading the H1N1 virus deliberately. So both they and their manager have had to deal with that as well.
Who'll be replacing them?
With the Razorbacks out, the Austin Longhorns move up to their place in the bracket.
I haven't heard of them.
Not surprising, Jim. They don't usually make it this far. It's a team of werebison.
Werebison? You mean like werecattle?
Absolutely. I know it's a bit shocking to hear. You usually don't see werecattle playing much other than football, but the Longhorns have really come into their own this season. They have a new coach, and they've been really hardcore in going for their goals. They even branded themselves with the LNBA logo, which has generated a lot of talk since that kind of thing is a major taboo in werebison society.
I can imagine.
Oh, yes. It's going to be a pretty close game tonight. Tom Olofsson of the Shepherds is just getting back from having a tapeworm removed, and Fred Colson of the Longhorns is just back from rehab, so there'll definitely be challenges to face on both sides of the court this evening.
Thanks for the update, Joe.
Don't mention it!
Travel correspondent Barrington Taylor recently spent some time in Mammoth Pass, a village in the northern hemisphere of the world of Relathor in the Dragon Dimension. He found that the village is aptly named, among other things. Here's his report.
Hello, listeners. Barrington Taylor here with local flavor for the Everyworld News. This week I visited the lovely village of Mammoth Pass, located at the foot of the Scythe Mountains up in the Frozen Kingdoms. Or rather, it would have been lovely if it had been located somewhere that it wasn't snowing all the time. Were it not for the assistance of an enchanted all-weather cloak, I'd likely have frozen solid moments after arriving. By the time I reached the village gate, I'd gain an immediate and unfortunate understanding of why the village is called Mammoth Pass. It seems the locals are obsessed with mammoths. Every archway, every building, and virtually everything else has used mammoths in its construction. There seems to be almost as many of the hairy, elephantine bastards around as there are snowflakes. The area's human and dwarf populations have taken a shine to them. Not only do they ride the mammoths, but they eat them, wear them, and build their homes out of them. With the people of Mammoth Pass, it's all mammoth, all the time. Mammoth, mammoth, mammoth. You can tell that particularly at the village's best and only tavern, which not surprisingly is called the Red Mammoth Inn. Little can compare to the feeling of utter despondency that reaches you as you cast your eyes across a menu as barren of options as the surrounding tundra. Admittedly, the Northmen try to be creative with their cuisine. Mammoth steak, mammoth pie, mammoth stew, and mammoth pudding, just a few of the examples of the local delicacies. Suffice it to say that unless you happen to get lucky and visit on a week that one of the area's fur-clad heroes has managed to slay an ice dragon, if you go to dine there, you're having mammoth. I'm told, however, that if one visits on the off-season, fish, wolf, and wild boar become available as well. How delightful. As for entertainment, they have a fellow there with a long beard that plays a mammoth bone lyre and tells a lot of dry and depressing stories about muscle-bound heroes with magical axes slaying necromancers in a time before everything froze over and there were decidedly fewer mammoths all over the gods' forsaken place. If you somehow bore of such a riveting spectacle and are the religious type, you can always go and visit their local temple and see a good old-fashioned human sacrifice to their harsh, one-eyed patron deity, offered in the hopes that he'll continue to intervene over the coming winter and keep the inhabitants from freezing to death for another year. All in all, as a tourist attraction, I give the village of Mammoth Pass 1.5 tusks. If you're heading up into the Frozen Kingdoms, unless you're truly desperate, I'd look for a different pass if I were you, or else avoid the mountains altogether. For anyone contemplating a visit to the area, I've been told that the town of Wolf Hollow is far superior, but between you and me, I wouldn't count on it.
Thanks for that report, Barrington.
Hello there, name's Maury. I'm the unofficial watch mouse around here, and you would not believe some of the things that have been going on lately. First off, this strange girl shows up, and ever since then, it's been crackers. She's not spat, though. Bit strange, but not bad. Anyway, turns out she's a dreamer, a very special person with the ability to create dreams for everyone. There's nasty things afoot, and it looks like she might be our only hope. I do hope you drop by and have a listen to her story sometime. Fascinating stuff. But for more information, check out thedreamersthreadnovel.com. They tell me everything you want to know about the story and podcast can be found there. The Dreamers Thread, a free audiobook podcast by Starla Hutchton, starring me, Maury. Don't miss it.
Our guest editorial comes from Elder Vampire Lord Vladimir Popov III.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to introduce myself. I am Lord Vladimir Popov III, more colloquially known as Vlad, in these, shall we say, less than formal times. I am a creature of the night, der Vampir, in the Germanic tongues of old. Vampire am I to the common man, the mortal of this age. And I come before you concerning a matter most grave. If you'll be so kind as to disregard the rather unfortunate and unintended pun. I speak of the current health crisis plaguing the vampire community, the obesity epidemic. Surely not, Lord Vladimir, I can hear you saying to yourself. How is it that obesity could become a problem amongst vampires? I shall tell you. Of old, vampires were creatures of the night. We were reviled, hunted, and destroyed if revealed. The thirst ever drove us, a craving for the warm lifeblood of the living. We had to be canny and subtle hunters to get the blood we needed to fuel our living death, while avoiding revealing ourselves to the populace at large. But the vampires of today, these vampires have ruined the ancient traditions that have long existed, the unspoken push and pull that existed betwixt the realm of the mortal and those of the undead. The vampires of current popular books, film, and television, these sexualized objects all women desire, these have caused a somewhat unexpected problem for myself and my kindred. You see, we are unable to hunt, no matter where we go. Nightclubs, bars, even when we pose as high school children so as to feast on the blood of the young, women offer themselves to us. And by women, I mean very nearly all women. Old, young, fat, skinny, attractive, ugly, you name it. I cannot so much as walk down the street without some breathless woman approaching me panting, her sumptuous neck exposed to me, jugular vein pulsating with desire and anticipation. And I, being what I am, bound by an ancient curse stronger even than death itself, am utterly and completely powerless to resist. What you mortals fail to realize is that the desire for blood is our passion and our greatest burden. When it is offered willingly, when it is put before us, we cannot but partake. And as such, I have drunk over 37 gallons of blood in the last 72 hours. I speak to you today not dressed impeccably in the latest fashion, perfect hair styled immaculately and just so, riding in a luxury automobile to a lavish party populated by beautiful mortals and vampires. My eyes do not flash a sexually transcendent auburn hue, and I am not glittering in the sun like some sort of mutant from a diamond mine. No! I speak to you from what I am told is a device known as a rascal scooter, wearing a pair of old sweatpants and wrapped in a rather comfortable blanket, bearing a device on it that labels it something called a snuggie. Why? Because I simply cannot venture forth hunting without some 17-year-old girl or 48-year-old mother offering herself to me in the hope of developing some mawkish romance where I protect her from evil vampires and werewolves. You humans fail to realize one rather important element to the vampire-human relationship. Vampires eat humans. Humans are vampire food. We eat you. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I don't find that very sexy. Also, why do women want to be bitten? You do realize being bitten by anything hurts. It's not a pleasant sensation. What manner of person deliberately searches out creatures that only regard them as food and somehow expects to be loved and cherished by the creature eating them? Let me be clear with you. I am not feeding on your blood because I simply love you so much that I must ingest the very essence that is you. I am doing it because of a despicable curse that literally precludes me from turning away from the thing I love and revile most. You are tormenting me, and I am tormenting you. Why on earth do you like this? Back to the main issue, however. You must also realize that this newfound obsession with us is leading to our very destruction as well. A vampire, by its nature, is a hunter. However, vampires traveling in areas where the vampire as a lusty sex object is not part of the cultural zeitgeist, and is instead a creature of evil that seeks to feast on human life in order to facilitate their own unnatural state as an animated corpse, often find themselves in situations they might not have been expecting. Wilfred Orange, a vampire I recently sired, was destroyed a month ago when, at a nightclub in Bucharest, he walked up to a beautiful young woman, casually bit her on the neck, and began feeding from her. I'm afraid he died a very confused death when, rather than moaning in ecstasy at the sensation of having a complete stranger shove what amounted to two very dull pencils into the sensitive flesh of her neck and begin drinking, she instead ran for help, screaming in fear and agony. Long story short, William's unlife ended for him when, much to his surprise, he was burnt at the stake amidst a crowd of angry villagers. So, I urge all mortals to remember, vampires are dangerous creatures. We are not to be trusted, and certainly not meant to be held as the romantic ideal of love. And to my vampire kindred, I urge you, cast aside your snuggies and slankets, rise from your rascals, go out and hunt once again! For it is only by doing so that we can avoid a fate worse than this living death that curses us, becoming overly romantic, cheesy caricatures that spend our time writing awful poetry in Moleskine journals while dressed in black shirts and jeans with black painted fingernails. That's right. We are on the verge of becoming emo kids. Thank you.
Well, folks, it looks like we haven't received any feedback yet, so we here at the Everworld News have decided to say to heck with the space-time continuum and read some more feedback from the future. So once again, we've looked ahead and pulled the following letters from our future timeline to read today. Ruth writes, in your exposé on Hitler's dinosaur breeding program on Titanic Earth, you referred to Joseph Goebbels' mound as a Triceratops. However, in most press releases, he's seen riding a Stegosaurus. Why is this? Yours truly, Ruth. Well, Ruth, that story has yet to be released, but from what I'm given to understand, Goebbels does prefer the Triceratops, but his press secretary has said that he looks more sincere and stately riding a Stegosaurus. I've heard, though, that the Allies are working on equipping some of their battle robots to fight both the Triceratops and the Stegosaurus, so we'll have to see what develops. Steve writes, why did you not spend more time covering the political machinations of the wool-based lifeforms in the sock dimension? I once lost a particularly devious pair of rainbow-colored toe socks, and know in my heart that they must be behind the attack on the Argyles. I would very much appreciate a follow-up on this riveting story. With concerned anticipation, Steve. Steve, we appreciate that you've written in. I haven't seen any stories on the sock dimension as of yet, but I want to make something extremely clear to you. The sock dimension is populated entirely by missing socks. They are not sentient, and even if they were, they would have no way of communicating. I doubt we'll have much to cover when that story comes up, and am frankly surprised and a little disturbed to hear that we'll eventually air it. But in the meantime, Steve, they're just socks. Let it go. Tachyon86 writes, I have listened to your podcast for a long time, and just wanted to let you know how it affected my life. I remember way back in the second episode when you read the email that I'm writing now, and I learned that a horrible fate would someday befall me. I consequently spent the remainder of my life torturing myself and wondering what would happen to me. Today, that horrible fate has come, and I cannot even find the words to describe it. I know now that life is meaningless because we have no free will and cannot change the past, no matter what we do. I hate you so much for showing me the nature of existence, and wish I could go back to the way things were when I was blissfully ignorant of the horrors of reality. I hate you, I hate you, I hate you. Regards, Tachyon86. P.S. I hate you. Thanks for writing in, Tachyon86. I'm glad we were able to enlighten you. That's always been our mission here at the Everworld News, to give our listeners a healthy dose of knowledge and understanding, no matter what the cost. Now, folks, in all honesty, I must implore you once again, write in. We can only pluck so many of your letters from a future timeline before mysterious tragedies like the one that will befall Tachyon86 start happening. So do your part to save lives and preserve the timeline by sending an email to podcast@everyworldnews.com. We always appreciate feedback from the present and we'll be happy to read it on the show. And once again, if there are any writers and or podcasters out there who'd be interested in putting together a guest editorial like the one you heard in this episode, just drop us a line. The Everworld News Podcast is written and anchored by me, with additional material by Paul Miller. The character Doc Elastic was created by Mark Livengood and is used with permission. Our script surgeon is Dr. Darren Kennedy. Our announcer is David W. Brown. In this episode, Paul Miller performed the voices of the Castigator, Bishop Lorenzo Delgado, and Lord Vladimir Popoff III. Rhys Ambrose played Ian Wilkinson, Don Shockley, and Smiling Pete. Mishy Howard was Anna Johnson and Mambo Naomi Moreau. Ben Walker played Barrington Taylor and Benny Doyle. David Selby was Patchwork Joe Mundy and Osgood Helgram. Brandy Johnson played Courtesy Girl and Rita Shockley. Miss Katarina performed the roles of Madame Lilith and the voice of Pleasure Corps. Mark Livengood was Doc Elastic, Darren Kennedy was Senator Cathodosh, and Dan Raybarts was Captain Jean Pegleg LeBlanc. Starla Hutchton was High Marshal Jane Pruitt, and Mark, the Encaffeinated One Kilfoyle, was Lord Malevolent. All music was composed and performed by Kevin MacLeod, who you can find on the web at incompetech.com. For more information on the podcast, come and visit our website at www.everyworldnews.com. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm Jim Ryan, and I'll see you all of a sudden.